Direction Shares leveraged ETFs fuse the benefits of exchange-traded funds with the innovation you expect from Direction, providing investors with opportunities to magnify their short-term perspective, utilize bull and bear funds for both sides of the trade, and trade through rapidly changing markets. Direction Shares,
ETFs to the power of X.
To learn more about Direction Shares, click on the Direction banner on the front page of indexshow.com or call 866-476-7523. There is no guarantee that the funds will achieve their objective. The ETFs are not suitable for all investors and should be utilized only by sophisticated investors who understand short-term trading, leverage risk, consequences of seeking daily leverage investment results, and intend to actively monitor and manage their investments.
An investor should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of Direction Shares carefully before investing. The prospectus contains this and other information and can be obtained at directionshares.com. Please read the prospectus carefully before investing. Distributed by Foresight Fund Services, LLC.
This is your weekly insight into the major stock, bond, and commodity indexes and the financial products tracking them. It's called the Index Investing Show. Welcome to the program. My name is Ron DeLegge. We'll be together for the next hour talking about the birds and the bees of successful investing. 877-711-5611 is the number if you'd like to join us. Ron@indexshow.com is the email address. U.S. government is on the brink of losing its AAA-rated credit score. Should you own government bonds? We'll get into that on today's program. Also, what type of investor are you? Are you a disciplined investor who makes deliberate choices, or are you like most of us, a neurotic mess, someone that makes accidental decisions? Today's program guest is Meyer Statman. He's an award-winning scholar, and he has authored a brand new book called What Investors Really Want, Discover What Drives Investor Behavior and Make Smarter Financial Decisions. So we'll be talking with Meyer all about behavioral finance, and he's delivered some excellent studies in this latest book and some of the hidden reasons behind most of our investing approaches and biases. Let's get right to topics for discussion. Strong first quarter earnings thus far in the technology sector, good results from Intel, Yahoo. IBM's first quarter earnings jumped by 10%, helped by a weak dollar. And in the transportation sector, we saw CSX Railroad had a 30% jump in first quarter earnings on demand from consumer goods companies along with industrial makers. So I'd say thus far, first quarter earnings pretty good for blue chip companies. XLK, by the way, follows some of those technology stocks like Yahoo, IBM, and Intel, all a part of XLK. On a year-to-date basis, technology stocks within the S&P 500 ahead by 1.6%. And for those of you that want to leverage technology stocks, ticker symbol TYH, which aims to triple the daily performance of tech stocks, up by 2% over the past month, doing quite well. On a year-to-date basis, still in negative territory, but technology stocks could be an area that begins to pick up some steam because of positive earnings. In the home building sector, things are still quite gloomy. According to the National Association of Home Builders, they have a housing market index which looks at how home builders view their own business, and right now, readings are not very good. The index fell to 16 in April from 17 in March. Any readings below 50 indicate that builders as a group consider conditions poor rather than good. And what's been hurting the new home market has been a large supply of existing homes that many are being sold at foreclosure prices. And of course, that's a competition for those new homes. By the way, this particular housing market index was near 70 in 2005. Today, it's at 16. So it just shows you how much the opinion of their own business that home builders have taken. It's a sharp, sharp drop-off from just a couple years ago. Warren Buffett has been sued. Did you see this? A shareholder of Berkshire Hathaway has filed a lawsuit alleging that Warren Buffett and the company's board of directors hurt investors by failing to act swiftly when they found out about stock trades of outgoing executive David Sokol that he made ahead of Berkshire's $9 billion takeover of chemical company Lubrizol. So Warren Buffett being sued, has this particular situation changed your viewpoint or changed your opinion about Warren Buffett? I want to know what you think about that. For the most part, Buffett has always been one of those Wall Street's, which you might say, one of Wall Street's few likable characters. But does this latest situation, I'm not sure we can call it a full-blown scandal, but does this latest situation, does this make Warren Buffett dislikable? Has it tarnished his reputation? Let me know what you think, Ron at indexshow.com. Sokol is being investigated by the Securities and Exchange Commission. If he gets indicted, I think at that point it becomes a scandal, a full-blown scandal, and I think at that point that Buffett's reputation begins to take a hit. But until then, I think he's still in the clear. What do you think? Ron at indexshow.com. Be sure to give me your first name along with your city. I'd like to see what you think about that. Is there anything more annoying than media reporters who have trouble reporting the facts? Financial media, ladies and gentlemen, still having trouble accurately reporting on the Madoff fiasco. This Reuters headline reads, Madoff investors' lawsuit against SEC thrown out. I don't want to talk about the story. I want to talk about the gross misreporting that happens on a daily basis, particularly as it relates to the Madoff situation. Let me read that headline for you again. Madoff investors' lawsuit against SEC thrown out. Strike one, Madoff's investors. Can we really call them that? In my view, they were never investors. From day one, they were always gamblers. But I know as a reporter, you don't want to call them gamblers because that's too harsh. So you call them something else, Mr. Reporter. Call them wealthy boneheads. Call them arrogant cream puffs. Call them fine young cannibals. Shareholder aliens. Aloof weenies. Call them anything but investors because in this case, they were never investors. They were something else. But this article titled Madoff's Investors Lawsuit Against SEC Thrown Out also refers to Madoff's scam as a Ponzi scheme. Wrong. At this late stage of the game, do we still not know the difference between a Ponzi scheme and a Madoff scheme? Well, let me help you understand the difference. One is a multi-million dollar scam. The other is a multi-billion dollar scam. Do you see the difference? So stop comparing apples and oranges. Ponzi scheme, multi-million dollar scams. Madoff schemes, multi-billion dollar scams. Big difference between the two. Stop calling one the other. And stop comparing apples with oranges. The other thing that I'd like to see the media do is to stop slandering a dead man, Charles Ponzi, by linking him to a financial crackpot like Bernie Madoff. Ponzi was the originator of grandiose investment scams, but Madoff, he was the master. So is there anything more annoying than media reporters who have trouble reporting the facts? What do you think about this? Ron at indexshow.com. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Index Investing Show. 877-711-5611 is the number. U.S. government's on the brink of losing its AAA-rated credit score. Should you own government bonds? We'll get into that on today's show. What type of investor are you? Are you a disciplined investor who makes deliberate choices? Or are you like most of us, an absolute mess, neurotic mess, someone that makes accidental decisions, someone that makes emotional decisions, someone that winds up with a whole bunch of investments in their portfolio that they know absolutely nothing about? Well, you're going to love today's program guest, Meyer Statman. He's author of What Investors Really Want, Discover What Drives Investor Behavior, and Make Smarter Financial Decisions. We're going to get into that on today's show. He's a professor of finance at Santa Clara University, and this is his field of study. This is one of my favorite topics, by the way, is investor behavior and decision making. And it's something that I think we're going to begin incorporating more of into the Index Investing Show. You know that we do our weekly portfolio report cards, and that has become a regular part of the show where I grade your investment portfolio. I give you an A, a B, a C, a D, or an F, depending on how I think your investment does across five key areas. But what I'm going to start incorporating into the portfolio report card is I think I'm going to start diagnosing the type of investors who submit their portfolio report card. So I think that's what I'm going to start doing from this point forward, making that a regular feature. I think it's something that's been missing. Well, time for us to take a quick break. This is the Index Investing Show. Stay with us.
Shares daily leveraged exchange traded funds are for sophisticated active traders. Before you trade them, test your knowledge about these dynamic products with the help of Direction Shares Online University. Go to directionshares.com/radio and find out if leveraged ETFs are right for your investment objectives. Enroll in the free course, study at your own pace, and if you're a financial advisor, obtain 1 hour of CE credits. Go to directionshares.com/radio today. Before investing, you should carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. This and other information is in the prospectus and summary prospectus, a copy of which may be obtained by visiting the fund's website at www.directionshares.com. The prospectuses should be read carefully before investing. Investing in the funds may be more volatile than investing in broadly diversified funds. Funds that use leverage may be riskier than alternatives that do not. Funds are not designed to track the underlying index over a longer period of time, are not suitable for all investors, and should be utilized only by investors who understand leverage and shorting risk, consequences of seeking daily leveraged investment results, and actively monitor their investments. There are risks associated with investing, including possible loss of principal. Distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC.
What type of investor are you? Are you calm, diligent, economical, alert, vigilant, reasonable, orderly, patient, opportunistic, rational, realistic, responsible, disciplined, decisive, defensive, discerning? Or would you describe yourself as fearful, overreactive, short-sighted, impulsive, compulsive, forgetful, childish, reckless, delusional, dazed, confused? How would you describe yourself as an individual investor? What type of qualities are you cultivating? How about the illusion of control? We think we have control of our investments, that everything is under control because we're behind the wheel. One experiment in the world of trading involved 107 traders from the City of London investment banks. The traders were told that they would see a chart of an index whose value would change up or down. They were also told that even though these changes in the index are partly random, three keys, Z, X, and C, have a special effect. The task was to raise the index as much as possible at the end of each of the four rounds of the game. The traders were rated by their success at raising the index at the end of each round and were compensated by the total value of the index at the end of the four rounds. In truth, movements in the index were random, and the three keys had no effect on the outcomes. Any sense of control was illusionary. Still, some traders believed that they had much control, while others believed that they had little. So how did it turn out? How did this experiment with 107 traders from the City of London investment banks, how did it turn out? Well, it ended up that traders with the highest sense of control, those that thought they had the most control over their investments, displayed the lowest level of performance. Very interesting finding. This is inside the book, What Investors Really Want. Author Meyer Statman will be my guest on today's program. He's coming up in a little bit. Rocker Ozzy Osbourne and his wife Sharon have just paid $1.7 million in back taxes to the IRS. Apparently, the Osbournes' financial advisors or advisor have been asleep at the wheel. Quote, just because you're paying someone does not mean that they're doing the job correctly. End of quote, said Sharon in a Twitter message. She continues, you cannot rely on anyone but yourself. You have to be on top of your own business affairs. My fault. lessons learned, end of quote. That's so true. But when you fall behind in your taxes by $1.7 million, you also cannot entirely blame your CPA or your advisor or whoever else has been overseeing your financial affairs. You cannot entirely blame them because ultimately you're responsible for your tax bill. And you have to be aware. I mean, once your tax bill starts getting above $100,000, $500,000, $1 million, isn't that something that you know about? Isn't that something that you're aware of? Or does it all of a sudden strike you? It reaches $1.7 million, and then all of a sudden you realize, gee, this is getting pretty big. The IRS, anyway, put a lien on one of the couple's Los Angeles area homes. That's according to a report. So Sharon Osborne is now on a mission to find out why. She wants to know why the IRS put a lien on her home in Los Angeles. Memo to Sharon, liens are what the IRS does to you when you don't pay your taxes at all or when you pay them late. So welcome to the miserable world of being a taxpayer. Guess what? Even rock stars or ex-rock stars have to pay taxes. Let's get into some of your emails. Dear Ron, do you have any opinions on the Fidelity Small Cap Discovery Mutual Fund? That's ticker symbol FSCRX. I own it in a traditional IRA account. Signed, Bruce, in Park City, Utah. Well, the Fidelity Small Cap Discovery Fund, that's ticker symbol FSCRX, it invests in small company stocks or companies with a market size under $1 billion. Now, the fund is categorized as a small cap blend fund, which means it holds a mixture of both value along with growth small cap stocks. Now, the fund charges annual expenses of 1.04%, which isn't necessarily high for an actively managed mutual fund, but it's nevertheless substantially more than I would like to see you pay for a mutual fund investing in small cap stocks. Now, comparable small cap ETFs like the iShares S&P 600 Small Cap Growth Fund and the iShares Russell 2000 Growth Fund have annual expenses that are around 80% lower compared to the Fidelity Small Cap Discovery Fund. Now, how much do you think saving 80% in annual fund expenses, how much of a difference do you think that's going to make to your bottom line? You think that's going to make a big difference over the long run? Think about that. And while you're thinking about that, I'm going to talk about performance because over the past 5 years, the Fidelity Small Cap Discovery Fund is neck and neck with small cap growth ETFs, which tells us that the managers of this particular fund, the Fidelity Small Cap Discovery Fund, have not been doing a very good job at beating small cap indexes. And I know that because what I'm doing here, ladies and gentlemen, it's a very simple exercise. What I'm doing is I'm comparing the performance of the Fidelity Small Cap Discovery Fund to small cap ETFs linked to the S&P 600 and Russell 2000 growth indexes. See, this is the correct way to compare the performance of your actively managed mutual funds. It should always be versus their corresponding index or ETF. It should not be performance comparisons of mutual funds according to their peer groups or according to mutual fund categories of their peers, because since peers have the tendency to underperform corresponding indexes, and if we're using those peers as a benchmark, well, guess what happens? We end up with a distorted view. We end up with a distorted result. It's entirely possible that an actively managed fund may beat its peer group, but not beat its corresponding index or corresponding ETF. And that's why I always use the latter thing as a point of comparison. Remember, large cap managers need to be compared versus large cap index ETFs. Small cap managers need to be compared versus small cap index ETFs. Emerging market managers need to be compared to emerging market ETFs, and so forth. That is the right way to compare fees. It's the right way to compare performance. It's not versus peer groups. And so for that reason, I think a better choice in lieu of the Fidelity Small Cap Discovery Fund would be, as we mentioned earlier, the iShares S&P 600 Small Cap Growth ETF at ticker symbol IJT, or IWO, which has the same approach of investing in small cap growth stocks, but following the Russell 2000, a little bit of a broader index. Between the two, what's my favorite, S&P 600 or Russell 2000? I'd probably go with the S&P 600 small cap index. Let me add one more thing. Your chances at the racetrack are probably better than you locating and you investing in a market-beating mutual fund. But since I don't endorse either activity, you should do neither. Let's read one more email. Dear Ron, I listen to your podcast each and every Monday around noon. I'm disabled, enjoy the company, and excellent advice. Could you talk about mutual funds with low initial and low additional minimums? For example, the Amana Fund's initial is $250 and a reoccurring initial or a reoccurring investment of $25. A lot of investors cannot afford a large initial. Signed, Al in Hampton, South Carolina. Yes, you're right, Al. Most mutual funds have a minimum investment requirement. Usually it's $1,000. Some have lower minimums but require the investor to commit to invest a minimum monthly amount until they reach that minimum threshold of $1,000 or $2,000 or whatever else. You should not be making the decision to go with one mutual fund over another because one company has a lower initial investment requirement than the other. That's not a very smart way to invest. Rather, you should stick with the companies that offer low-cost investment options, preferably an extensive lineup of index funds touching all the major asset classes, U.S. stocks, bonds, international stocks. Coming up next, Meyer Statman, author of What Investors Really Want, right here on the Index Investing Show. Stay with us.
Are your investments making you money or melting your family's net worth? Tell yourself the truth. Isn't it time you found out how your investments are really performing? Go to indexshow.com and we'll grade your investment portfolio across five key measures. You'll know exactly how much your investments are costing you along with how they're performing. Get your complimentary portfolio grade by going to indexshow.com. Find out how your investments are really doing. Go to indexshow.com today.
Well, people want what they can't have. It's true in life, and it's true with how we invest our money. Today, we're pleased to have with us Meyer Statman. He's a pioneer and one of the eminent scholars in the field of investor psychology. He's a professor of finance at Levy School of Business at Santa Clara University in Northern California. What Investors Really Want is the title of his book, What Drives Investor Behavior and How to Make Smarter Financial Decisions. Meyer, welcome to the Index Investing Show. Great to have you with us.
Great to be with you, Ron.
Now, one of the fantastic mysteries of our behavior as investors is how we sell our winners, but we hold on to our losers. What's wrong with us, Meyer? Shouldn't it be the other way around?
Oh, nothing much is wrong with us. We are perfectly normal. And in this particular case, we are normal stupid. What happens is in our normal thinking, when we buy a stock, say for $100, we put it in a mental account. And then, of course, we hope that we'll be able to close that account at $150 because it is surely going to go up. And instead, of course, it goes down to, say, $40. And so we have that loss. Now, one, hindsight is getting in the way because now we really kick ourselves because, of course, now we can see all the warning signs that were there in clear sight that the stock is going to go down. And then, of course, regret that accompanies it, that emotion that we all know where we kick ourselves and we say that was pretty stupid. Now, as long as we have not realized the loss, we have hope that it will come back. But if we realize the loss, this really is when we take the big kick because we give up all hope of recovery. And so, you know, it is normal behavior, but not very smart behavior. And if we can change it and learn to realize our losses and enjoy the tax benefits of that, we're going to do much better.
Today, we're pleased to have with us Meyer Statman, professor and author of What Investors Really Want. It's on our recommended read list. Discover what drives investor behavior and how to make smarter financial decisions. Now, unrealistically optimistic investors often trick themselves into believing that they are better than the rest of the crowd or better than the market at playing the investment game, when realistically they're not. Can you give us an example of overconfidence that typifies the unrealistic investor?
Well, you know, my high school teacher once stopped in front of the class and looked at us, and she said, the confidence of the ignorance. We tend to be overconfident. And so one major manifestation of overconfidence in the investment field is thinking that we can beat the market. Well, to beat the market, you have to beat that tennis player on the other side of the net, and that tennis player might well be Goldman Sachs or Warren Buffett or some insider who is trading despite the fact that he might be violating the law. But in all of those cases, you are likely to end up being the loser. And so if you ask yourself, do I really have realistic confidence that I can beat the opponent on the other side, when I look at it, my answer is no, and so I stop, and I think that most investors would do wisely to do the same.
Now, the Internet has introduced, Meyer, as you know, to us social networks that promise this idea of community intelligence. In other words, the opinions and ideas of many translates into better investment results. So what's your view about online social networks? I mean, do they really make us better or wiser investors?
Well, they can make us much better. I've seen a question posed by one investor who said, hey, you know, I have $10,000. I'm young and I'm willing to take that risk. How can I put it in some risky investment that will make me a lot of money? And somebody a bit older said, hey, kiddo, do you have an emergency fund? Have you considered retirement savings and so on. So it can be useful. It can be useful in sharing misery about the difficulty of saving and perhaps finding tools, helping one another save when we are young. But, of course, a lot of the advice that is given in those chat rooms and other social media is really quite misleading. For example, promising you very easy ways to beat the market. And there's very little that will tell you the difference between good advice and bad advice.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Index Investing Show. Ron at indexshow.com is the email address. Today we're pleased to have with us Meyer Statman. He's a professor of finance at Santa Clara University in Northern California. What investors really want, discover what drives investor behavior, and how to make smarter financial decisions. That's the title of his latest copy. Now, making the wrong financial decisions is a problem, but so is financial indecision, or the inability to make choices. How big of an obstacle or problem is financial indecision?
Well, actually, it's not a big problem at all. You know, there's always that saying of don't just stand there, do something. And many times the saying should be don't just do anything, just stand there and don't do anything stupid. Because, for example, people, when the market went down, In 2008 and early 2009, got frightened and sold. Well, they missed the increase. And so in this case, deciding not to decide or deciding just to hold on to what you have was not very bad. Sometimes we have to make a decision, and we are reluctant to make it because anytime we make a decision, we open the door to regret that I mentioned before. And so we're going to kick ourselves by doing that. But on the whole, I think that investors tend to err by doing too much rather than too little in terms of their portfolio.
Meyer Statman, author of What Investors Really Want, joining us. Now, just because someone is an experienced or knowledgeable investor does not mean that they're immune to the counterproductive forces that destroy all good investment plans. Talk about that.
Well, sure. You know, if you drive your car and you want to turn left and instead you turn the wheel to the right, you're going to go right and you might get yourself into an accident. If you don't get quick feedback when you make a mistake, you will be making it again and again. Unfortunately, the market is so volatile that sometimes you can do something stupid, and it turns out well, like concentrating your investment in one stock, and it happens to be a good stock. So I think that you need here really the tools of science, the tools that will tell you the difference between luck and skill, what is in fact true and what just happened by accident. And there really is no substitute to the scientific methods where you apply knowledge, logic, empirical evidence to tell you the difference between truth and illusion.
Now, you say that we should not live like kings when we are young, only to live like paupers when we're old. But at the same time, we shouldn't live like paupers when we're young, only to leave a king's fortune behind when we're gone. So, in other words, getting the right balance between saving and spending and investing, I mean, that's easier said than done. Tell us more.
Well, it is, in fact, something that most people, I would say, or at least a good number of people, do perfectly right. There's no perfect point in between too much and too little, which is just right. There is really a range, and we tend to adjust. In other words, for example, as the market went down in 2008 and 2009, people stopped spending so much, and suddenly they saved more, which is, of course, the right approach. They stayed on the job longer if they could rather than retire. That, too, is right. And so, generally, we are good at correcting our course when we get off course. Then there are people who are unable to do that. There are people who, for example, have little and spend as if they have a lot when they are young. And then there are people who are old and can definitely spend from a very ample portfolio, and they still have the sense that they have to save because that is what they've been doing all their lives, and they really shortchange themselves for no good reason. And so finding that good balance is sort of is hard mathematically, but I think that we are not that bad at finding that way in daily life.
Meyer, I want to thank you for joining us. You've written a marvelous book, very hard to put down, by the way, and I think it's an important contribution to the understanding of investor psychology and how we can make better financial decisions. Thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be with you, Ron.
Again, that was Meyer Statman. Pick up his book, What Investors Really Want. You're listening to the Index Investing.
Direction Shares Daily Leveraged Exchange Traded Funds are for sophisticated active traders. Before you trade them, test your knowledge about these dynamic products with the help of Direction Shares Online University. Go to directionshares.com/radio and find out if leveraged ETFs are right for your investment objectives. Enroll in the free course, study at your own pace, and if you're a financial advisor, obtain 1 hour of CE credits. Go to directionshares.com/radio today. Before investing, you should carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. This and other information is in the prospectus and summary prospectus, a copy of which may be obtained by visiting the fund's website at www.directionshares.com. The prospectuses should be read carefully before investing. Investing in the funds may be more volatile than investing in broadly diversified funds. Funds that use leverage may be riskier than alternatives that do not. The funds are not designed to track the underlying index over a longer period of time, are not suitable for all investors, and should be utilized only by investors who understand leverage and shorting risk, consequences of seeking daily leveraged investment results, and actively monitor their investments. There are risks associated with investing, including possible loss of principal. Distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC.
I was reading an email earlier from Al in Hampton, South Carolina. He had a complaint about the high minimums that mutual funds require for their initial investment and subsequent investments. And here's another way around mutual fund minimums, Al, is to just open up a brokerage account. You can invest in ETFs. Many brokers now offer commission-free online trades for buying and selling ETFs. So that's something to consider. Most brokerage firms, though, require a minimum initial investment, so you can't completely escape that minimum initial investment of $1,000 or $2,000 or whatever it is. That's something to consider. What did you think about that interview with Meyer Statman? What investors really want, discover what drives investor behavior, and make smarter financial decisions. Yeah, I've thought about it rather extensively. And after much self-debating, much self-deliberating, hemming and hawing, and reflective thought, here's what I've finally decided to do. I have decided not just to grade your investment portfolios on the air, but to start diagnosing the person whose portfolio I am grading. So in other words, to tell you exactly what type of investor they are. Let's try this with Brian in Pittsburgh. On last week's program, I did a portfolio report card for him. He got a final grade of a D, which is not good. His portfolio, unfortunately, had poor diversification, very high risk. He built an all-stock portfolio using growth at a reasonable price and Warren Buffett strategies. So here's my diagnosis of what type of investor profile that matches Brian based upon my analysis of his portfolio. Brian is an ape person. You know an ape, like the movie Planet of the Apes? These are the creatively challenged individuals that attempt to mimic the financial transactions of well-known investors. So, for example, if John Paulson sells his last position in bank stocks, they'll do the same. On the other hand, if John Paulson buys bank stocks, they'll do the same. That's because they're ape people. Now, here's the problem with ape people. By the time they get around to putting through identical trades to their financial idols, the market has already passed them by. But instead of becoming disheartened, they become emboldened because they're now investing just like the big boys. Over the years, Warren Buffett has become a popular target for ape people. They say to themselves, well, if Buffett can become a billionaire by investing in just a handful of stocks, why can't I? And so it is. The ape person convinces themselves, they delude themselves into believing that they can achieve billionaire status by imitating Buffett's every move. Apparently, billionaires are billionaires because they know what they're doing. Ape people, on the other hand, are not billionaires, nor are they even close. Now, you may think I'm making fun of Brian by calling him an ape person, but I'm not. I'm 1,000% serious. In fact, it may surprise you to know that at one time, I was just like Brian. I was an ape person, too. But you see what happened in time? I came to the realization that aping the big boys is a good theory on paper, but rarely works in real life. The better strategy, I discovered, is to build a diversified portfolio, starting with index funds and index ETFs. A diversified portfolio touching all the major asset classes, U.S. stocks, bonds, commodities, cash, real estate, tips. And then after doing that, any extra money that I have that I want to play around with individual stocks and try to become like an ape person, like following Buffett's every move or whoever else, I'll do that with extra money. Would you like to get your investment portfolio graded? Would you like to see what type of investor you really are? Who knows? You might be an ape person, or maybe you're another type. Go to indexshow.com and click on Grade My Portfolio. Now, you can also follow me 24/7 at twitter.com/indexshow. Those of you that listen to our regular radio broadcast can also listen to our free podcast. Again, just go to indexshow.com, click on the podcast link. Conversely, those of you that are podcast listeners, you can listen to our broadcast live in several radio markets. I don't know where you live, but you can go to our website and click on radio show and see the cities that our program airs in. We talked earlier in the show about Warren Buffett being sued. Well, here's another mogul in hot water. Sam Zell. Tribune's creditors alleged that Sam Zell's buyout was among the worst in American corporate history. Well, what about AOL's $162 billion purchase of Time Warner? I mean, what does that, or how does that colossal mistake rank to Sam Zell's Tribune buyout? Sam Zell, he made his billions in real estate. I say he should have just stayed with that. This is how moguls become turkeys, when they trick themselves into believing that they're masters of the universe and they start becoming experts in areas outside of their core competence. Sam Zell knows nothing about media companies. Nothing. He does know a lot about real estate. I mean, that's where he made his fortune. He should have just stuck with that. Well, should you own government bonds? I once had a family relative who was a big believer in U.S. government bonds. It was his opinion that government bonds were always a safer bet relative to other assets. And for that reason, he believed in an all-treasury bond portfolio. Nothing else. No stocks, no commodities, no cash, just a treasury bond portfolio. Unfortunately, my relative is no longer alive. But if he were, I wonder if he would agree that lending money to today's U.S. government is a safe bet. So given the U.S. government's deteriorating financial situation, the question is it wise to own government bonds? S&P's forecasting that national debt will rise to 84% of gross domestic product by the year 2013. So now that credit raters have finally, ever so hesitantly, joined the alarm squad, here's another alarm. Today's credit ratings still do not reflect the true credit risk of lending your money to Washington, D.C.'s financial drunkards. And let me repeat that because that's important. Today's credit ratings still do not reflect the true credit risk of lending your money to Washington, D.C.'s financial drunkards. That's one man's opinion. So I've got some strategies for those of you as it pertains to owning government bonds. Number one, if you're going to own government bonds, do it through a diversified all-market bond fund that also owns corporate bonds. A couple of ETF ticker symbols to put down: AGG, BND, Boy Nancy David. You can also stick with corporate bond ETFs, which exclude government bonds. That's another way you can approach this. Ticker symbol LQD, as in David. Now, if you're an aggressive short-term trader, well, then you should be looking at ETFs that short treasuries, like ticker symbol TYNS and TYBS. That's B like boy, S like Sam. Now, if you already have a large portfolio filled with U.S. treasuries, well, now's the time to diversify away from U.S. debt. Don't get caught. Don't get surprised. Don't wait for credit ratings to be downgraded. Don't wait for the U.S. government to lose its AAA rated status before making any moves. You got to make the moves. You got to make the changes. You got to make the adjustments before the storm, not during the storm. Those that fail to prepare should prepare to fail. I don't want you to fail. I want you to succeed, so you need to prepare. So diversifying away from U.S. debt makes absolute sense for those of us that have overloaded our portfolios with U.S. treasuries. This time is different. Yes, it is. So if you want exposure to government bonds, I think a better strategy, instead of owning an exclusively U.S. treasuries or U.S. government bond, think about going international, for crying out loud. International government bonds might be a good way to play this. A diversified portfolio of government bonds from around the world. I got a great ETF for that. Ticker symbol BWX, which I think is a great substitute for U.S. government bonds. That's the Spider Barclays International Bond ETF. So there you got some ideas on how to play the treacherous situation facing the U.S. government. Well, that just about does it for another edition of the Index Investing Show. You want to get your portfolio graded, or you want to see what type of investor you really are, go to indexshow.com. Please join us again next week. We'll be talking about commodities. Do commodities belong inside your portfolio? That does it for another edition of the Index Investing Show. And until we meet again, may the market indexes be with you.
Tell yourself the truth. Isn't it time you found out how your investments are really performing? Go to indexshow.com and we'll grade your investment portfolio across five key measures. You'll know exactly how much your investments are costing you along with how they're performing. Get your complimentary portfolio grade by going to indexshow.com. Find out how your investments are really doing. Go to indexshow.com today.
The opinions expressed in this broadcast are not necessarily that of our advertisers, sponsors, or broadcast partners. The discussion of investing is general and should not be construed as investment advice or an offer to buy or sell securities. Listeners are responsible for their own investment decisions and results. Before investing in mutual funds or ETFs, always consult a prospectus for risk, charges, expenses, and other information. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Past performance is not indicative of future results. No reproduction or dissemination of the Index Investing Show is permitted without the expressed written consent of its producers.
Are your investments making you money or melting your family's net worth?